Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 357, and we're going to continue from verse 13 of Numbers 31. At this point, the children of Israel, who were commanded by God through Moses to proclaim a holy war in essence to execute the vengeance of the Lord against Midian, they went, and what they did, you see, what the leaders allowed them to do, was not in accordance, exactly in accordance with the full, simple instructions that Moses gave them. So they were not obedient fully to the commandments of God. And unfortunately, this is what happens oftentimes with the leaders, with the people of God. You see, with those who are in authority, who are given a commission, they do not do fully what God commands. They do partially, they lean to their own understanding, they mix, the instructions of God with their own. And unfortunately, a lot of people follow them because they think, well, they're the servants of God, they know what they're doing, you see, even though sometimes they may perceive that certain things they do is not in accordance with the law of God, but they say nothing about it. Either they're afraid or they think, what do I know? They know better, you see. And oftentimes they do not even distinguish between what it means to fully obey God and what it means to only partially do it. And that's very important to recognize that. That's why God commands us to prove all things and to test the spirits, and to see whether those who call themselves apostles are truly the apostles of God or the ministers of God. We have to be always on guard, you see, because we're going to be responsible on a personal basis before God. And so Moses, he gave instructions here from God, and he realized that the people did not fully obey, you see. And that's what happens also later on with King Saul. Samuel, the prophet of God, gave him a commission to execute the vengeance of God, to proclaim a holy war, a genocide in essence, against the Amalekites. And he went over there with great zeal, but he did not fully obey the voice of God. And God regarded it as stubbornness, as witchcraft, as rebellion. And the kingdom was lost, as far as Saul and his dynasty were concerned. So that's a very important thing, that when God gives us something, we should fully do it. When we are in leadership, we should fully execute whatever God gives us to do. You see? Not lean to our own understanding, but to do all things in accordance, just like as we read many times, as the Lord commanded Moses. That's why Moses was a very faithful man. Whatever God told him, he did. That's the simplicity in Christ. And many of us do not believe in the simplicity in Christ as we should, and oftentimes we lean to our own understanding, and so we mix truth and error, and we present it as truth, you see. And God records all those things, and when the time comes, He's going to execute vengeance. That's what Paul says, God is a consuming fire. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the Eternal. So we have to be mindful of that. And so we're going to see here, the reaction of Moses to partial disobedience, where they did not fully do the will of God. And so we read in verse 13 again, and Moses and Eleazar, the priest, the high priest, and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them without the camp. You see, they were, in essence, the ones who were to bind or loose. You see, they were given the authority. They are the fathers of the congregation, in that sense. And the people of Israel were supposed to follow that. Well, they did not. Not fully. And so they have to do their part under the circumstances. And so this is what they are doing here. They all go out there, outside the camp, because the camp is holy and the people who just shed blood are not allowed to come in, and certainly not with the foreigners, you see. And they had to purify themselves before they can do it. That's a part of the law of God. And then verse 14, we read, and Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the leaders. You see, the leaders that should have obeyed God fully. The leaders that were commanded by Jesus Christ, you do not rule over my people as the Gentiles do, exercising dominion and authority over their faith. What do? They teach them the law of God, they teach them many things about Christ, and then they do not obey God fully. And God is not a respecter of persons. Whatever we sow, we're going to reap. You see? And so this is what we see here. In verse 14, he was very wroth with the officers of the host, the captains of thousands and the captains of hundreds who came from the service of the war. He didn't say he was angry with the people. They just followed orders. You see, they were not about to rebel. Now he was angry with the leadership. They're the ones responsible for it. And verse 14, we read, "And Moses said unto them, Have you saved all the women alive? Behold, these women that you saved alive, they caused the children of Israel, through the counsel of Balaam," he's the one behind it, "to revolt so as to break faith with the Lord in the matter of Peor." You know, as we read earlier, "And so the plague was among the congregation of the Eternal. Now therefore," that was a verdict. And some people say, how horrible, how evil. How can God be a God of love and do a thing like that? And so they call this God, you know, the old harsh monster. They think that's a father. You see? That's a demonic mind and spirit that thinks that way, and yet they think that they are the people of God, and they say that, you know, and they speak these kind of words. And for 2,000 years, the people that claim to be the church of God, that's the way they spoke. And to this very day, a lot of people feel that way. You see? Well, this is God. This is Jesus Christ giving this command. He's the one that gives the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And it's based on that that Moses was binding this war and in accordance with the instructions of God. You see? And he was responsible before God to do it as he commanded him, not his own things. And so based on that, this is what he's saying. It's not Moses saying it. This is Jesus Christ saying it. This is God of Israel. This is the kingdom of heaven speaking. You see? "Now therefore, kill every male among the little ones and kill every woman that has known men by lying with him." So all the males, every one of them, 2 years old, baby, older, you see, every single one of them, the children of Israel, had to go there, take their swords, and kill them. And how many people can stomach that? This was the mind of Christ. Put on the mind of Christ, we are commanded. How many of us can do it, really? You see, a lot of us are kidding ourselves. You know, we just pick and choose certain aspects of the mind of Christ, and as for the rest, we say we don't want it. That's the reason why people abhor God and hate His law and are His enemies and are not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. Because in their own mind, they decided what God is and what God is not, what love is and what love is not, what is right and what is wrong. And yet they call themselves people of God. This is Jesus Christ speaking. If you are not willing to follow Him, take your cross and follow Him all the way, you are not worthy of Him. And that's what He said. Because the first commission of the saints would be at His coming is to take their swords and execute vengeance upon the nations. You see? Before they sit down for the marriage supper. So therefore He says, kill every male among the little ones and kill every woman. So the women that were virgins were spared and they became a part of Israel. You see, and throughout all the wars of Israel, that's how a lot of non-Israelites were grafted into Israel. And they obviously were not allowed to practice idolatry, but they had to abide by the religion of the husband that is going to marry them, or the master. You see, and that's what we see here. All of them were killed, with the exception of the virgins. But all the women, children, that have not known men by lying with him, keep alive. So even the children here, that is women, children, you see, it's not children in terms of the boys, but women, children, in other words, young girls, obviously, under 12, 11, you know, they would be virgins. They have not known men by lying with him. Keep alive for yourselves. And encamp you without the camp 7 days, because you are unholy. Whosoever has killed any person, and whosoever has touched any slain, purify yourselves on the third day and on the seventh day. And those were the instructions of God. And this law, we're now, you know, these laws are not done away with. It has nothing to do with the temple sacrifices or priesthood. You see, yeah, although most people, you know, don't bother about it, they couldn't care less about this law of Moses, the law of God. And he said, you do that, you and your captives. You see, that is the ones that you're going to keep alive. Purify all of them. Everybody's going to be pure because this camp is a holy camp. This is the camp of the Lord. And God is very jealous about the purity of His people, of His church, of His wife, of His bride. He doesn't want to see any spots or blemishes there. And so, to every garment, he says, and all that is made of skin, and all work of goat's hair, and all things made of wood, you shall purify. Those things you can purify. And they had the instructions of how to do it. It's not recorded here. That's a part of the oral tradition. And Eleazar the priest said unto the men of war that went to the battle, this is the statute, all the law, which the Lord has commanded Moses. And Eleazar is speaking here because of the high priest, and he has also the authority to do so. And he's speaking about, again, another key of the kingdom of heaven. And he's binding this law. You see? If you don't understand all these things, then you come to the New Testament and you read what Christ tells Peter, and you don't know what you're reading. No context, no background, no understanding. And that's what most people are doing, unfortunately, and they're in darkness, and they think that they're in the light. And so he says, this is the statute, all the law, which the Lord has commanded Moses. Howbeit, the gold and the silver and the brass, in terms of the things that they're going to purify, you see, and the priesthood was involved in that, and the brass and the iron and the tin and the lead, everything that may abide the fire, you shall make to go through the fire, and it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of sprinkling. Well, to this very day in the Jewish community, they have what they call like alat kelim, you know, the purification of pots and pans and things like that. And Christ talked about it also in terms of the Pharisees, you know, you purify the pots and pans and things like that. This is this law of God. They were not inventing it, you see. And that's what they do. Put it through the fire. What does it mean? You know, well, the way they do it today, the way they've been doing it for a long time, the heat water, you know, they boil it, and then they put all those things in it, you see, and that's how they purify it. So this ceremony goes on to this very day in the Jewish community. And so this is what he's telling them here. Everything that may abide the fire, you shall make to go through the fire, and it shall be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of sprinkling. You see, and that's where they boil the hot water, and they do it, and that's where the fire is under it. And all that abides not the fire, you shall make to go through the water. So either fire or water, depending on what it's made of. And you shall wash your clothes on the seventh day, and you shall be clean. And afterward, you may come into the camp. So now Eleazar, the high priest, is giving the instructions according to the commandment that God gave Moses. So the high priest is not binding and loosing here on his own accord, you see. It's in accordance with the law of God, in accordance with the keys of the kingdom of heaven, you see. And that's what it means. Verse 25, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, take the sign of the prayer that was taken, both of man and of beast. Man would be, you know, the people. And you and Eleazar the priest, and the heads of the fathers' houses of the congregation, and divide the prey into two parts, between men skilled in war that went out to battle, you know, the warriors that went out, and all the congregation, and levy a tribute unto the Lord of the men of war that went out to battle, one soul of 500, both of the persons, and one soul would be a little girl, you see, and those little girls were given to the priests. And so the priests now were going to teach the enemies of God righteousness. You see? And that's the mind of God. That's the mind of Jesus Christ. And as horrible as it was, what they went through, the tragedies, now they're going to be righteous women who are going to be raising children in Israel who are going to be holy children. So you're looking at a woman like that down the road and you realize this is a former Midianite, a former this, a former that, that now has been raised in accordance with the law of God in righteousness. And the day will come, you see, in the future where her own people are going to be raised, and she's going to be raised, and she's going to be, hopefully, if she continues in the faith, a woman of righteousness to teach them also what she has been taught. You see, you think about it from the mind of God, from the point of view of the one who can kill and can bring back to life, and you begin to develop a different perspective and different understanding about all the things that you read now, that if you look just at them at that moment, you think, well, that's horrible, that's cruel, I don't understand it, and that's a problem. We don't understand it. Because we do not think like God. And, you know, there is an awful lot to meditate on and to perceive and to understand and to get to know the nature of God in a better way. And a lot of people are not doing it because they have no place for the law of God in their heart and their minds, in their life. And so he said, this is what you do. And you divide the prey into the two parts, the men that went to war and the congregation and God, you see. So you divide it among the three, and you take a tribute unto the Lord of the men of war that went to cattle, that is to battle, one soul of 500, both of the persons and of the beeves, that means the cows, and of the asses and of the flocks, take it, or their half, and give it unto Eleazar the priest as a portion set apart for the Lord. And of the children of Israel's half, you shall take one, drawn out of every 50, of the persons, of the beeves, of the asses, and of the flocks, even of all the cattle, and give them unto the Levites. So a part goes to the Levites, you know, the contribution to God, and a part goes to the priests. And keep the charge of the tabernacle of the Lord. You know, that is, give it to the Levites that give the charge of the tabernacle of the Lord. And Moses and Eleazar, the priest, did as the Lord commanded Moses. You see? They followed the instruction. These are the instructions that Peter was given by Christ. You see? Not to do your own thing. It's not that I give you a blank check and you do whatever you want with it. Here's a magic wand, you know? And you do whatever you want with it. It doesn't work like that. And when people do not have the fear of God and do not know the law of God and have not, of course, the king was commanded to do it. Not everybody is commanded to do it, but at least, you know, they should know the law of God if they don't write it themselves by their own hand and meditate on it day and night. So when they come to the point where they need to either loose or bind, they do it in accordance with the law of God, not in accordance with how they feel about it. And an awful lot of decisions are being made by so-called church leaders based on how they feel about it, and they bring a lot of iniquity on the brethren in doing so. And God said, vengeance is mine. And he's not a respecter of persons. When Moses stepped out of line, God told him, you rebelled against me, you and Aaron, and there is going to be punishment for it. You see? No going into the land. Well, that was terrible for Moses and Aaron, and they had to die. Couldn't go on. And so we must learn that, to be totally obedient and fully obedient in whatever position and station of life we are. And so this is what we read here. And so Moses and all the congregation, Eleazar, everybody, they all obeyed the voice of God. That's the kingdom of heaven. That's the government of God. People have taken upon themselves and they call themselves the government of God. That's a height of arrogance and blasphemy when you think about it. Government of God means God ruling through his law and his teachings. And whatever, you know, people he appoints, you see, but it's still him doing it, not them. We're just instruments. Just like the microphone is an instrument. The microphone is not the speaker. The person that stands behind it is the speaker, you see. And so forth. And that's the way it works with God. And people that don't know that, they begin to personalize authority, you see, and power, and all kind of things like that. And they heap a lot of misery on themselves and of others because of that. And so, these people were obedient to what God commanded Moses. Verse 32, now the prey over and above the booty which the men of war took was 600,000 and 70,000 and 5,000 sheep. So that was a big war with a big people, big nation. Lots of people, lots of riches. And 70,000 beeves, that is cows, and or oxes, whatever. And that's what they've taken. And 70,000 asses. And 32,000 persons in all of the women. We're talking about women here, little girls. Virgins. Oftentimes before age 11 or 12. That's the age of puberty. At that point, they were married, and obviously they had sex. And in those days, you know, people married young. You know, they were mature enough for that, I guess. And this is what we read here. 32,000 Midianites, children of Abraham, of Keturah, were integrated into the house of Israel. You see? In other words, there's an awful lot of blood there that is not purely of Israel, but of other generally other relatives of Abraham, or sons of Abraham, because all those nations were around them. And that's how God made it. He placed nations who were descendants of Abraham around Israel. And so whatever foreigners were integrated into the nation were still children of Abraham. And the blessing that God gave Abraham still stands. You see, to you and to your descendants, I shall give You see, the promises, the covenants, you know, all these things. It's only later on that people outside, totally outside of that confine, or the children of Abraham, were also being grafted in the days of the apostles. And so this is what we read here. 32,000 little girls, you know, they call them women, because biblically everybody's called a woman, or everybody's called a man, but you know, that then you have to look into the detail, you know, what age. Verse 36, well, actually, you know, the women, we read here, 32,000 of the women that had not known men by lying with him, and the half, verse 36, which was a portion of them that went out to war, was in number 300,000, and 30,000, and 7,500 sheep. A lot of it. And the Lord's tribute of the sheep was 65. And the beeves, 65. That is, and the beeves was 36,000, of which the Lord's tribute was 12. And the asses were 30,500, of which the Lord's tribute was 61. So these are instructions that people studied again and again and again. And every time they went to war, they were supposed to obey these commandments of God. You see? And they made decisions based on these teachings of God. And these were their keys of the kingdom. And that's how they did bind and loose. And made decisions. That's how the elders and the priests and all that did it in accordance to that. And that's basically what Christ was telling now Peter. You know, you are not in the priesthood, and you are not all the scribes and Pharisees that sit in the seat of Moses, but I'm going to give you the same authority there over the people that are going to follow me. You see? And all of them at that point were Jews, and then otherwise were, as time went by, you know, others were added also. You see? There was no invention of a new doctrine there that the false church had taken upon itself and totally changed to its own liking, you see, and made something totally different. Unless we study the law of God, we do not know what God is speaking about, either in the, you know, in later on in the prophets, or in the New Testament, you know, through the disciples. We must know the law of Moses to understand all those things, because it's only based on that that Christ taught and the disciples and the apostles. You know, that's how they teach, and that's how they shoot to this very day. Everything is based on the law that God gave Moses, and God doesn't need to repeat everything again and again and again. You see, just because we don't see a lot of these instructions here in the New Testament doesn't mean it's not a part of it. That was the foundation of the Israel of God. And people have forsaken that and departed from it and rejected it, and they still do to this very day. And that's why God said, unless you return to this foundation, this rock, my teachings, my nature and character, my laws and commandments, unless you do, I'm going to utterly destroy the entirety of the whole earth. And yet people say, well, forget about it, that's the old stuff, old law, that's only for the Jews. And so this is what is happening here. And then we read in verse 41, and Moses gave the tribute which was set apart for the Lord unto Eleazar the priest, he was a high priest, as the Lord commanded Moses. You see, Jesus Christ is in charge. Jesus Christ is yesterday, today, and forever. You see, this is the Christian doctrine in modern terms. Men's language, you see. Verse 42, and the children of Israel's half, which Moses divided off from the men that warred, and now the congregation's half was 300,000 and 30,000 and 7,500 sheep, and the 36,000 beeves, and 30,000 and 500 asses, detailed instructions as the Lord commanded Moses. We don't give more, we don't give less, we are fully obedient to the law of God. That's the simplicity of Christ. A lot of people don't know what it means. You do not know the law of God, how would you know what is the simplicity that is in Christ? Some people invent their own concepts and ideas. And this is what we read here in verse 47. Well, actually, in verse 46, and 16,000 persons, because there were 32,000, and the persons here, it talks about women, young women, you know, girls, you know, in essence. Even of the children of Israel's half, Moses took one drawn out of every 50, both of men and of beasts, and gave them unto the Levites that kept the charge of the tabernacle of the Lord. As the Lord commanded Moses. Always, as the Lord commanded Moses. As the Lord commanded Moses, and there is no deviation from it. And there will never be. And that's what God said, that unless you remember that law of Moses which I commanded him, you're going to be utterly destroyed. And to that end, God is going to send what later on he called through the prophet Malachi, or in Isaiah, a person is going to send through the wilderness, in other words, into the wilderness of confusion, of darkness, and all that. Somebody in the spirit of Elijah is going to have a helper with him, two witnesses. One of these days, we're going to see them appear in Jerusalem and do this work. And they're going to bring people back to the law of Moses. And all mankind are going to be taught the law of Moses. And if they do not obey it, they're going to be punished. You see, and the tribulation will come upon them, that is the day of the Lord, and horrible punishment. Because God says that I'm going to destroy the whole earth unless they return to the law of Moses. Well, if they know nothing about it, how will they return to the law of Moses unless he sends in someone to teach them the law of Moses? So those people are going to do just that. And it's not going to be a pleasant job for them, so that's not something that anybody should covet. It's not going to be a pleasant job for those two witnesses, you know, 3.5 years there, clothed with sackcloth and ashes, you know, out there in the streets, ridiculed by everybody, although they have a lot of power, you see. And they're going to have to face the whole world, including the Jewish community, and a lot of the rabbis there, and they're going to like them for quite a while. Not a pleasant task to be in, and yet a lot of people in their foolishness, they all covet that office, and they all proclaim themselves to be Elijah. Not waiting on God to declare that himself, as John the Baptist himself would not acknowledge the fact that he was that person, even though this is in essence what was said. You know, so he acknowledged the fact that he's the voice in the wilderness like Isaiah, but he was not about to step out and say that he's Elijah. He let Jesus Christ say that. And a lot of people in their ignorance and arrogance, they themselves declared by their own mouth that either they are the Elijah or they declare somebody else to be the one. And that's a height of arrogance, you see. Now, this is not the will of God. So let no man be caught doing that, because God does not appreciate the fools who speak when he hasn't spoken to them. And we certainly do not want to be in this category. Self-exaltation and height of arrogance, that's the nature of the devil. Verse 48, and the officers that were over the thousands of the hosts, the captains of the thousands and the captains of the hundreds, came near unto Moses, and they said unto Moses, your servants have taken the sum of the men of war that are under our charge, and their lot, not one man of us. Imagine that. You go to war, nobody got killed. And that was a big war. None of them got killed. Why? Because that was a holy war that God declared, and he went in the forefront and won the battle for them and strengthened them and preserved them and protected them, and his holy angels were with him, making sure none of them gets killed. You have to see so much behind the scene here, what is really happening here. And so this is what they are saying to him. And we have brought the Lord's offering, what every man has gotten, that's beyond what they were supposed to do, of the jewels of gold, of armlets and bracelets, signet rings, earrings. You know, earrings, the men were wearing earrings. They do it again nowadays, this generation. And girdles, to make atonement for our souls before the Eternal. And Moses and Eleazar, the priests, took the gold of them, not because they were covetous, but because it was offered to God, cannot refuse it. And so we continue in verse 52. And all the gold of the gift that they set apart for the Eternal, of the captains of the thousands and of the captains of the hundreds, was 16,750 shekels. For the men of war had taken booty, every man for himself, and Moses and Eleazar the priest took the gold of the captains of thousands and of hundreds, and brought it into the tent of meeting for a memorial. Again, the concept of memorial, as many times we went through that, for a memorial for the children of Israel before the Eternal. And it's very important, you know, when we study anything in the Bible, to always go beyond just what we read at the moment. Otherwise, our understanding is going to be very limited by it, and that's what happens again with the memorial. When people study the Word of God only a little bit here and a little bit there and take things totally out of context, without background, without thorough understanding of the entirety of the book and what's in it, you see, then they obviously are prone to make mistakes. They may be sincere, they may be devout, you see, that's neither here nor there. a good understanding have all they that do His commandments. And one of His commandments is that we study His Word and meditate on it day and night. And when we do, then everything that we read, we're able to put it in context, because we have the entirety of the book in front of us. And so we read here about the memorial. In Hebrew, we read the Moed Zikaron, in other words, a time or an appointment for memorial, a time to remember. And Israel is to remember. You see, in the history of Israel, all the things that happened to Israel, why did they happen? Who was guilty? You see, and how God delivered them from it. And in this case, this war took place, and many lives that were destroyed, and we read about innocent lives, in essence, children, because of iniquity. Had the Midianites not initiated that evil, and had the Israelites not responded to them, this would not have happened. And so there are a lot of lessons to be learned from this event that took place here, that in essence God was forced to declare, and Moses, you know, against people that otherwise could have lived in peace with Israel had they accepted, you know, the will of God at this point. But when evil, when sin enters into the picture, everybody is paying the penalty for it. And so this money that comes into the tent now is another memorial in the history of Israel. And as you study the law of God, you realize there are many, many occasions for memorial. And the overwhelming majority of them have nothing to do with a yearly memorial, but with all kind of things that happen at any given time. In this case, it's a war. At any time Israel had a war, you know, they brought the measure of it into the tent, and every aspect of it was a memorial. So they had that, some items that were brought into the tent and were consecrated and remained there. Well, every time you looked at them, you remembered the reason for it, the purpose of it. And that's what the memorial is all about. So this is one concept that, unfortunately, as we mentioned several times before, that since people do not study the entirety of the law of God, of the Word of God from beginning until the end, then they come to a certain word, certain concept, certain law, certain instruction at any given time throughout the entirety of the book, be it in the former writings or the later writings, or, you know, as people would call them at different names, either Old Testament, New Testament, you know, human terminologies that have nothing to do with reality. And so they obviously do not understand it properly. And there are a lot of people out there that think they're wise in their own conceit. Oftentimes, you know, they have, you know, partial knowledge and understanding, and then they prance around, you know, to teach everybody, thinking that they know it better. Well, you have to know the entirety of the book, forward and backward, and not only know it, but understand it. You see? Because otherwise it's so easy to be misled, and it happens to all of us. And so this is what we read here, and then we're going to continue with chapter 22, that is 32. And now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle, and they saw that the land of Jezer, the land of Gilead, which was on the east bank, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. It was a fertile area, it was a flat area, and also mountainous area, but fertile everywhere. And obviously, they thought that would be a good place for us, even though it was not the land of Canaan, in other words, not on the other side of the Jordan, yet the entirety of that whole area, I guess, to begin with, God intended for the children of Israel to have, with the exception of the territory that He gave to Moab, Ammon, and Edom. And so this is what we read here. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spoke unto Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, and notice always the involvement here of the spiritual leaders and also the other leaders of Israel. And that's in essence how the government in Israel developed, until they asked for a king, and then after that things changed. But even then, the priest was always there, had to be consulted, the high priest. And the leaders, obviously, among the priesthood, and also the leaders of Israel, were decisions that affected the entire nation, were at stake. And still, the government that they had was a very simple form of government that was based on the law of God, and it was not the complex government that came later on. And so in verse 3 we read, this is what they told them, Atarot, and Dibon, and Yazer, in Hebrew it's Yazer, in English Jazer. Every time you see J, basically it is Yah, and Nimra, and Heshbon, and Eliah, in other words, all those villages, towns, cities on that side, and Shebam, and Nebo. And Nebo was a place where it was a mountain, not in American concept mountain, it was a very high mount, hill, and Moses was buried on that hill, Mount Nebo. And it's pretty high, probably about 4,000 high. And Beon, and the land which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and your servants have cattle. And they said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given unto your servants for possession. Bring us not over the Jordan, because that's what the entirety of the body of Israel was supposed to go. And so obviously Moses is alarmed at that. Verse 6 we read, and Moses said unto the children of Gad, and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to the war, and shall you sit here? He thought that they were not interested in helping the children of Israel conquer the land, not interested in having war. Well, obviously that was not their intention, and they made it clear to him. And you're going to see something here. In other words, a leader may think a certain thing. He may be the head. God appointed him, and still, he should be willing to listen to people and even change his mind if what they say is proper and right in the sight of God, not a matter of rebellion. And so we're going to see here again, you know, what happens when people function in harmony and unity, when their heart is right, when what they do may be different than what everybody else is doing, but still not contrary to God. And there were many occasions like that, and even with these very people later on, where you can read it in the book of Judges, when they finally finished doing their job, so to speak. In other words, they went with the children of Israel into the land and helped them conquer the land. When that was over, then Joshua told them, you know, you can go back to your own lands. And when they did, they decided, in order that future generations will not be cut off from the main body of Israel, to maintain that link, they built an altar. Now that was, in other words, God did not command that, you see. So it seems to be, on the surface, contrary to the will of God, if you're going to use it as another place to sacrifice when God said only one place. At that point, it became Shiloh. Well, this is not what they had in mind, that is. And they explained it to the priest. As a matter of fact, all of Israel was alarmed because they realized that God is going to be furious with that when people depart from him. And he's going to punish the entirety of the congregation for it, for not doing what they're supposed to do. A lot of people don't realize that. That God holds all of us collectively responsible for the sin that is in our midst. That we have the ability to do something about it and we don't. Especially when God is in the midst of his people. If he is not, that's a different story. But when he is in the midst of his people and they have the ability to do it, they're within a community, then they're supposed to take care of the matter. And so all of Israel was alarmed, and they gathered all the men of war, and it's quite a huge army, and they all came to do battle with the rest of the children of Israel because of that altar. Well, and they explained it to the high priest and to the leaders that had nothing to do with rebellion, you see. Then the high priest and the others accepted the reason for it, and there was peace. And so oftentimes, when you study the entirety of the law, you realize that there are certain things that God commanded, but if for whatever reason, you feel that this is not something you want to do, and it's not contrary to the will of God, God will change his mind. You see, that's what Ezekiel did when God told him to cook his food with men's dung, and he felt revolted at that, and he told God about it, and God changed his mind. He said, okay, you can do it with cow's dung. And that was different, and, you know, Ezekiel could take that. So as you study the law of God, you realize that there are certain areas where there is a choice, that God gives us a choice, and we can do something that is different, but again, within the context of obedience to God and order, is not with a spirit and attitude of rebellion. And that's in essence what we're going to see here. And so they came to Moses and told him about it, and Moses was going to make sure that what is happening here is not a matter of rebellion. And so he says, shall your brethren, verse 6, go to the war, and shall you sit here? Verse 7, and wherefore will you turn away the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? So he had to worry about the entirety of the congregation. If they see this brethren of theirs, of Reuben and Gad, remaining behind, they'll say, no, why should we go and do battle? You know, we can all stick around here. There's plenty of land here. And those lands, mind you, they were already conquered by Moses and Israel earlier from the Amorites. And so that was there was an overall issue here to deal with. So whatever we ask should not be to the detriment of others. And if it's not, then God would say, okay, that's you know, I can go along with that, even though that's not what I had in mind originally. And so this is what he's saying here. Wherefore will you turn away the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? Thus did your fathers, that's 40 years earlier, when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up unto the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they turned away the heart of the children of Israel, that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled in that day, and he swore, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward, they were considered to be responsible because they were the members of the society that were able to make decisions, and those under that were considered to be children, so I did not hold them responsible. In other words, he was not, as we read that law in several places, he's not going to impose the penalty of what the fathers had done upon the children. They're all going to die in their own sin. Unfortunately, there are certain decisions that the parents make, and they affect the lives of the children for generations to come. But it's not because God has brought that punishment upon them, it's by the deeds of the parents. And in essence, what the children of Israel had done here, by the mere fact that they rebelled against God, and they were not going to the land, well, the children had to suffer for another 40 years in the wilderness when they could have been in their own land. You know, farming their lands and having families there. And that's the reality. Oftentimes when we do things, we should remember, are other people around us going to be affected? And so based on that, oftentimes God is going to punish the congregation based on the damage. And that's why the leaders are the most responsible and accountable before God, because the damage that they cause by whatever decision they make, no matter how small, affects the lives of many. And so this is what he's saying to them. People who have no respect for the gifts of God, like Esau, you see, the birthright didn't mean much to him. You see, he had to pay the penalty, and he still does to this very day for it. And when we, as Jesus Christ said, when we put our hand to the plow, we're willing to follow him, you see, and then somewhere down the road we change our mind, well, our condition is going to be much worse than if we have never even agreed to do anything about it. And so it's very important to learn a lesson from that, that when we make a promise, that's what God commanded us, whatever comes out of our mouth, we should keep, we should do. Because one of the things that God hates is people who are double-minded and change their mind and are not faithful until the end, because that's one of his qualities. And he wants his people to be just like that, to develop qualities of faithfulness, that whatever proceeds out of our mouth, we must keep it, as you read in Psalm 15, even to our own hurt. And those are the kind of people that we read there that are going to be in the mountain of God, in the kingdom of God. And that's one of the reasons why, later on you read the end of the book of Revelation, that liars are not going to be there, and fearful people are not going to be there. You see, the fearful person said, well, I'm going to do it, and then he sees all kind of obstacles and problems, and he thinks, oh, no, I cannot do that, and then they turn back. Well, people like that were not willing to take the kingdom by violence, in other words, putting their whole being and heart to it and willing to suffer the consequences. God said, I don't want people like that in my kingdom. And so this is very important to realize what is really happening here. It has a wide background and far-reaching consequences, one way or the other, either for good or for bad, depending on what is being done. And so this is what Moses is telling them, that those people that have done that, They brought a lot of damage upon the entirety of the nation. And we're going to stop at this point and continue next time. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next time.